Succession number 20124, Reel 2.
John Anderson, Reel 2.
Yes, so far as my actual fighting service, if you call it that, is concerned, I was with Brigade Headquarters and not actually with the 4th 1st Battalion.
We should say it was 33 Brigade.
And that was 33 Brigade, that's right, yes, of 7th Indian Division.
Any incidents that happened to you in this area near Abbottabad?
Yes. Within a very short space of time, having been posted up there, the Northwest Frontier started to erupt again, and I think it was called the IPI. IPI. he started making a nuisance of himself, and the battalion left Abbottabad and went up onto the Northwest Frontier. Now, for how long, again, I can't really remember, but the long and short of it was that I was just merely looking after the campsite, which was then fairly empty, but needless to say, they leave a lot of details behind. Admin stuff and so on and so forth, and quite a few troops as well. So that gave me a chance of getting to know more of the chaps in the battalion, and at the same time learning a bit more Urdu and Gurkhali. Luckily, I had a jemadar there. A Gurkha jemadar who spoke very reasonable English, so that was a great advantage to me. I probably learnt more language in that odd 3 or 4 weeks than at any other time.
So you were in Abbottabad?
Yes, the actual camp was a place called Shinkiari, but that was just north of Abbottabad. But and Abbottabad, of course, was the depot of both the 5th and 6th Gurkha regiments. Our own were not depot, they call them centres. Depot is an English term. The centre for the 5th and 6th regiments of Gurkhas was Abbottabad, and ours was at a place called Dharamsala, which was some way off.
And then?
From there, it was training in various areas, and bit by bit we moved down south, never really knowing where we were going to, and we ended up at a place called Ranchi. That was the final training ground, and it was from Ranchi that we eventually went down into the Arakan.
What happened at Ranchi? Can you give us
some details? Well, again, it was all training, jungle warfare, and exercises. Much the same as one experienced in this country earlier on in the war.
And then you went to Arakan?
Yes. I parted company from the battalions at this stage because I was detailed to take the entire brigade transport by sea, whereas the others, to be honest, I forget how they got down there, but obviously road and rail, I imagine. But I had to go down to a place called Vizagapatam on the east coast of India, and took the brigade transport, the vehicles, carriers and so forth, down to a place called Chittagong. And there I had, we had to wait some time. We were sort of getting ourselves organized, and we had a small camp where we were left alone for some time, merely waiting instructions to join our various units, because it was here, brigade headquarters. I had chaps from the 1st Queen's and the 4th 15th Punjab, as well as the 4th 1st Gurkhas. You may not know this, but I think this was as a result of the Indian mutiny. They formed brigades in the Indian Army of three separate castes or nationalities. And in the main, there were several divisions on this basis. You had one English, or British I should say, one British, one Gurkha, and one Indian battalion in each brigade. And it was amazing how well that worked. It really was. And a lot of friendships were made, a bit of rivalry, of course, and a bit of leg pulling. But it was a marvellous setup. And you see, going back to the Indian mutiny, it was the Gurkhas who helped to a large extent to restore order. But if you had brigades entirely of one particular caste, if they became troublesome, you had a problem on your hands. But with separate battalions like that, action could be taken to sort things out.
So you were on the voyage from Visakhapatnam to Chittagong.
To Chittagong, that's right.
With the brigade transport.
That's right, yes.
Did you go without a hitch?
More or less. It was rather amusing. We went from Visakhapatnam. I can remember helping to offload the ship. And this was going on all through the night. And I managed to get a job on one of the derricks at lifting the vehicles out of the hold. They weren't run-off jobs like you got across the channel here. They were cargo ships, and the transport, the trucks and the carriers were in the hold. And for some extraordinary reason, nobody realized how, one of the trucks caught light, and we merely hauled it out of the hold, and instead of slinging it over the port side and onto the dock, we slung it over the starboard side down into the water and just put the flames out, and then threw that one away. It was no good. There was a river, I can't remember the name of it, river we had to cross, and the only method of crossing it was by rail. So the first part was a journey by rail, which was quite short. And there was a shuttle service. And I was waiting with all our trucks and carriers, and the train came, it was a steam engine, of course, with a whole lot of flat trucks. And the idea was that we merely drove our vehicles onto these flat trucks. Anyway, on one of these flat trucks on the train which had arrived to take us off, there were two vehicles which had broken down. And so nothing could move onto the train until these two were moved off. And nobody seemed to do anything about it. And I was getting bothered because I had a timetable to keep. And so I made the suggestion that the flats were unhitched and put to one side, and then we could at least start loading. And nothing was being done, so in the end, I went to the driver of the train, an Indian, of course, and funnily enough, I could drive a steamroller, believe it or not. I'd been taught to drive a steamroller, and I chatted with this engine driver, and was getting him to do the shunting, and I said I'd give him a hand with it if needs be. Then anyway, the RTO turned up, the rail transport officer, and got very nasty and said, I mind my own business and leave him to run the organisation. And he got in a bit of a huff and decided he would go and fetch his senior officer to deal with me. And I saw these two coming towards me, and you won't believe this, the chap he was bringing in as a senior was a chap I worked with in Pall Mall. So we had a laugh and we sorted the problem out, and that was a real coincidence.
What do you remember next?
Well, from there, the battalion had gone down further south ahead of us. They'd gone, of course, their transport was mules, and there's a range of hills there, the Mayu Range mountains, and our division was going on to the eastern side.
Don't worry about the map. Just
And that meant that they actually had to cross this range of mountains, and there were no roads across at all until miles down further south. But there was a footpath a track. And virtually single file, you know, one behind the other. And I wasn't with them, of course. And they went across by a pass called the Gopi, G-O-P-P-E, the Gopi Pass, and got to the other side of the hills and then turned south down towards the lower Arakan tracts. There was no question of getting transport over there at all. And we were literally left behind playing a waiting game. And what they were trying to do was to find some method of getting transport across the Mayu Range. The call eventually came, because having got further down south, they found there was another track, but a bigger and better one, which the engineers started to work on. And that was the Nucky Dork Pass, which ran parallel with the Gopi Pass, but several miles further down. And the engineers made an incredible job of that and made it acceptable to jeep transport. Nothing much more than jeeps. And that's when I first experienced it. I took the brigade transport down and under orders, and we went across overnight. It was quite exciting, because it was on through jungle to a large extent, and steep fall away banks on one side or another, and then you suddenly came out into the clearing at a place called Sinswaya, where the rear echelons of the brigade was, and then ultimately that track, the Okie Doke Pass, it was nicknamed eventually. Eventually, that was made even bigger and stronger and wider. Shortly before the balloon went up down there, we were very fortunate because the 25th Dragoons, with their Lee tanks, got across. And that's when the box came into being, and where all the fighting was eventually. And this was late 43, early 44.
What are your own personal memories next?
Having got down there, it all lay doggo for a bit. Both sides, the Japanese and the British, were prodding each other to find out who was where and how strong and that sort of thing. And there was quite a lot of spasmodic fighting for a time. And then once again, there appeared to be a lull. There was a bit of artillery fire, not a lot. It was all very much undercover and patrolling, mostly at night and that sort of thing. But I wasn't personally involved in this, but the 4th First Gurkhas were, as were the others, of course. But then it was very early in February 42, around about the 4th of the month, I think. That was when the Japanese attacked us.
44,
sorry, yes. That was when the Japanese attacked us, and that's when things started to go wrong.
Can you describe in detail what happened, please?
Yes, well, of course, we weren't aware of the general picture there at that stage, but the Japanese were trying to open up a passage northwards through Chittagong and eventually Calcutta. And at the same time, they were coming round way up north in northern Burma to try and make one huge encirclement. And we were involved in a comparatively minor way at this stage. The Japs' view probably was to draw our troops down from the north, down into the southern tract of the Arakan there, where they hoped to cut them off separately, and that would make life easier for them up north when they were entering Imphal and Kohima. But say, the vast different. We're talking of not quite 1,000 miles, mind you. Certainly, it's 600 or 800 miles further north, and the Japs succeeded in literally cutting us off entirely. There, we were entirely surrounded, and they even got into our Nakida pass, and they cut that, so they blocked that off. And there were two things which saved our bacon there. One was air supply, and they were making the Air Force were incredible. They were even dropping to individual companies, believe it or not, at one stage, air supply. And the other was that the 25th Dragoons and their tanks had got across that pass before it was cut off. But the no doubt about it, the Japanese was a bloody fine soldier and very tough. And utterly fearless. And they had gone through Malaya like a dose of salts, and bearing in mind it's all similar countryside, as soon as they came up against opposition, they didn't necessarily go to battle over it. They merely split on either side and went behind. And of course, that becomes demoralizing to the enemy because they're conscious of having people behind them as well as in front of them. And that's how they went through that Malayan Peninsula, I won't say with the greatest of ease, but very successfully. And they were going to do the same thing in the Arakan. And that Arakan ultimate battle of the box, as they call it, that really, in my view, was the turning point there, because the Japs failed in what they had intended to do. And their lines of communication were then extensive, far greater than ours were.
What happened to you personally in the box?
Well, I was down at brigade headquarters, which was some miles south of the divisional headquarters. And suddenly there was a complete collapse of communication. I wasn't aware of this at the time, of course. And brigades were trying to get in touch with division and couldn't. And what we didn't know was it had been overrun, and all the radio sets had gone. And the brigadier, Loftus Tottenham, lovely man, he told me to take a Bren gun carrier from the 4th-1st Gurkha Regiment and go and try and find out where division were and what had happened. And I set off with a driver and one gunner, and halfway up, I can't remember the name of the place now, but I can visualize it still, we were shot up by a Japanese unit, which was up on a hill just to one side of us. And the driver was shot through the mouth, and I got some small bits. But anyway, I took over the driving from him and pushed on and just memorized where that had happened so that I could report it later on. And when I was getting near Sinzwea, where the box was, I knew where I was heading for. The steering went on this Bren gun carrier. I couldn't turn right. And then, much to my pleasure, I suddenly saw one of the 24th Dragoons tanks in front of me. And so I asked him if he could give me a tow. So he passed me a bloody great tow chain, you know, sort of thing that could hold the Queen Mary, hooked it onto my carrier, and was pulling me along one of these mountain side roads. And we came to a right-hand bend, and I couldn't turn right, and I literally, the carrier with the three of us in it, slipped off the road, down the cud side, as we called it, and down the hill, and on the end of this tow rope. And then suddenly, to my relief, I found myself, I was being towed up. Of course, the tank driver had got no idea what was going on behind him. But I was just like a wooden box on behind a motor car. Anyway, I was pulled up onto the top and eventually got to the divisional headquarters, or the box became the divisional headquarters, because Maservi, the general, he and several of them got away, and I can remember them coming in looking very stressed and bothered. And that was when this box was formed. And in that box, odds and sods, you can say, just like that. It was scores of different, or troops from scores of different units, Gurkhas, Indians, British, engineers, signalers, you know, all the normal admin folk that normally are just a bit behind the lines.
Can I just go through this ambush? Was it you were actually ambushed while you?
Yeah, yeah.
You've been given this job by Loftus Tottenham.
That's right.
Where was he when he gave you the job?
Well, he was down at brigade headquarters. It was a place called Tatmakali, where we were. And that again, in turn, was just behind the what you might call the front line posts, which was further south still.
And so you were in what kind of vehicle?
I was in a Bren gun carrier.
And who did you have with you?
I had two Gurkhas with me.
Do you remember their names?
No, I don't. It wasn't my orderly. I can remember my orderly's name. He can quote his number. But I merely had one of the carriers from the 4th First Gurkhas, and that it had a crew of two, and I was the third there.
How long had you been going before you were ambushed?
Not long, for half an hour or so, I suppose. I can't remember the length of journey I would have had to have completed. I could probably measure it on a map, but it was only a mile or two. And the chaps, you see, had got in behind us, and it was this ambush I ran into.
Were they firing with rifles or?
No, machine guns. Yeah. I've got a sort of note that the doctor I went to see eventually. I've still got the note that he gave me in my diary here.
Do you know the date?
Yes, that was the 4th of Feb. What actually happened? My chief concern, having got up there, was to get treatment for the driver who was, I say, he'd been shot in the face and he was in a bad way. The other Gurkha, who was in the back of the carrier, and he was almost sat on top of it and he wasn't touched. He was lucky. But I got a bit of backlash, probably ricochets, I suppose, in my arm. But anyway, what I did then, when I got there, was to get this lad to the dressing station. And I took him along there, and he was taken care of. And I thought, well, I'll get something put on my arm. So I went along to this dressing station, you know, the MDS that it was known as. And it was just getting dark then. And I went into the dressing station. There were two or three chaps there I knew. There was one a major, I think, Hamilton.
Don't worry about the name.
Yeah. And I had a chat with him. He'd been hit.